Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 547 of the JV Club with my phenomenal guest, my friend, my colleague, just a wonderful person, Beth Lissick. Beth and I have known each other for many, many years. She is a best-selling author. She is hilarious and wonderful and compassionate and great. So I'm so excited for you to listen to this episode. And, you know, I talk a little bit more about my mom's situation more than maybe I have in the past. So felt really good to kind of open up and talk more about that as well. And no better person to talk about it with than the phenomenal Beth Lissick. So please enjoy this episode. I hope everybody's gearing up for Max Fun Drive. You know, we love how much you support this fantastic co-op of a network and all the shows on it. So I'm very excited about it. And I hope you are too. I appreciate you more than you could ever know. But I will reward you right now with a little someone I like to call Beth Lissick. Enjoy the episode. I love that I waited till we were recording to then ask you how your Friday was, which is a very specific reference to perhaps someone's life ending. So that's a very upbeat,
yeah, you know, and the
non-complicated question to ask at the beginning.
He actually held on until Monday, and it was his wife was so surprised, and we were all so surprised. But he was at their house, and he was in a bed in their living room in front of their fireplace, and you know, it was cold and yucky here, and but his wife is really wonderful, and all the dementia, all the people with dementia that I work with up here in the Hudson Valley all live with family members, and so it's really different than when I worked in the city,
so
and
different.
Everybody was on their own and had 24/7 care with a rotating, you know, cast of caregivers. So
yeah did that, is this, and that's just sort of, I guess, not coincidental, but I guess, is it just sort of a matter of like, if you are up there, the chances are higher that you will need to be with family members because there isn't like the same kind of like facilities and stuff?
Or? I think when I first started working, so I've always loved to have an odd job, like being a writer and doing all the things I do. I'm always just like, okay, time for an odd job. What am I going to do?
Sure.
And so Eli, my husband, who you know, gave me a gift certificate for a massage. Uh-huh. And this is like 6 years ago. And when I went to the woman's studio apartment, because of course he didn't get it for like a, you know, like a fancy massage place. He's like, I met Phyllis. She's an energy healer and she seems really cool. I think you're going to love her. And I met Phyllis and she was like, you know what you should do for a job is look into being a companion to older New York City people who need a friend. And I was like, oh God, that sounds so up my alley. That sounds great. And so it started out as like, I'm just going to try this. And so I got in contact with an agency. And they hooked me up with my first guy, who was a doctor from Mount Sinai, who got frontal temporal dementia, like the kind that, you know, is all your impulse control and your decision making, and super young. And so he had to retire in his 60s. And so I became his companion, but then I just stayed with him to the end. I stayed with him for a couple of years. And so in the city, I think there's more wealthy people whose families hire people through this, like these agencies and stuff. And so I think that was the difference, I think, of the people that I worked with. I started out with an agency and then I sort of just went freelance, but it was all through these circles of people who had more money, because this shit is expensive.
Oh my God.
Like, I don't know how anybody does it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that I don't want to fictionalize anything, but you are a marvelous, marvelous writer, and it just sounds like a story that I would want to read.
I'm trying to write it, and it's so hard. It's actually harder than anything that I've ever done, but I think as I get older, it's also harder for me to write nonfiction for some reason because I'm so aware of like mistakes that I've made in the past writing memoir things or things that I wish I hadn't done and then writing about somebody else's life. Right. You know, so I'm just trusting that somebody is going to, I'll have readers and editors that will help me disguise identities and things like that because sure. it's like these people are entrusting me with, you know, their lives and their family members are,
yeah.
you know, I mean, I don't want to, I want to tell the story because I do think there are very few, there's not a lot of documentation of caregivers writing about what's happening. That's somebody who's not related. That's yes. not like my yes. mother has dementia. Oh, my husband has dementia, whatever. So
yes.
it's like, I'm this outside person and, you know, of course I'm way more patient with all of them than I could ever be. My own mother is actually living with me right now. And we've just had these moments where I'm like, Mom, I am so sorry. I'm so crabby. And it's just like, I can't believe it. She's 85 years old. And I'm like, why am I being a jerk? So
you're
anyway, I am writing about it. All of Great. My various exploits in the city and then up here my friend calls me country driver because I'm just like driving around in my car and up here I do more like a few hours with somebody mm-hmm. and a few hours with somebody else where in the city it was like full time job, you know, 12-hour days 3 days in a row or sometimes four, you know, or overnights like a 36-hour shift during the pandemic.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a different thing up here, but I'm still loving it all these years later. That's why I started saying it was like this odd job, but then I just got so into it and I yeah. was like, I'm good at this. Like, I like doing this.
I've never been more sure that someone would be. Like, it just makes so much sense to me. I guess I'll back up for a second yeah. for those listening, although this has always been a podcast where we can just jump in the middle of a conversation. But Beth and I have known each other for a billion years. We met in San Francisco when we were both living there. We were both part of the sketch comedy community. And I would hazard to say one of few women. So
that's
that
true.
Was
at the time,
a little bit
cow.
Of a thing. Yeah. Yeah, really. And you just are wonderful and are again, such a great writer. And, I was so excited that we just got to perform together on the Red Room Orchestra's Sketchfest show of the Harold and Maude soundtrack, where we even got to read scenes from Harold and Maude. And you were the show stealer. And I mean that friends of mine emailed after the show and I told you they would. I was like, stealing the show. No question about it. That's how I would feel if I were watching this. And sure enough, like a handful of people who had been there were like, you were great. I do have to say, I cannot stop thinking about how amazing the uncle was. And so it was.
It yeah, was so
with
fun.
With your arm flap.
It was
flap.
So fun. I know. I got to wear like a jacket with a... like a false arm in it that would salute when I pulled a string.
Oh,
it was very fun.
It was so satisfying. It was so satisfying. I didn't know. I mean, it's one of my all-time favorite movies. I would say for many years I said that it was my favorite movie. I did not know how much I needed to see my friend Beth Lissick wearing that uniform and saying those lines. But I definitely did. But yeah, and during the course of... you know, getting a chance to hang out a little bit backstage, we started talking about what you've been up to. And it's 100% if I weren't just doing my podcast in person, lo these many years, I absolutely would have already had you on. And then the pandemic has made that more possible. So thanks, pandemic. Only upsides. But I love what you're doing. And I think it's I'm sure for so many people that you interact with, that there are people who feel so intrigued. And I think even just hearing that you are working with older patients, by and large, with dementia, it's just such a tender place on the skin of our humanity right now,
yeah.
because especially in the United States, because we just have such complicated relationships with elder care and with our own parents and grandparents
yeah. And with getting older ourselves, like I feel that too.
Getting older, our mortality. And yeah, and the more, you know, ubiquitous dementia is, the more, you know, we're living inside generations that are like, is this inevitable? Is this me? Do I just need to accept that I will experience this in right. some way, whether right. it's or Alzheimer's make a plan or just dementia.
If it gets
make
a really bad. Like,
yeah. So I think it's so interesting that you're doing something that, like, I don't want to say is loaded because that is a negative connotation, but something that it is just not an easy, quick, like, oh, I work at a law firm. Like, right. just to say that is just this, it just pulls from so deep inside of people just hearing the words, you know, yeah. about what you've been doing.
Yeah. I feel like I needed it. You know, I really needed it. It's like I started writing when I was in my 20s, and I love writing, and I love, like, when we met, you know, doing sketch comedy, performing, doing all sorts of stuff. But I never had it in me for either thing, acting or writing, to, like, really do the things necessary in a career way. You know, it's like I had some books that were successful and some that weren't, and some, you know, I just was working on my projects, but I didn't have that thing of, like, I didn't want to get headshots and have to, like, go on auditions. And, like, I love acting, though. I think it's so fun. And, you know, it's funny because this really, a lot of times, the work that I do is, like, acting for one person and improvising and
Boy,
being,
that
like,
makes
so in the
much
moment.
Sense. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're just like, all right, what are we doing, like, right now? Like, whoa, wasn't expecting this. All right, left turn. Like, here right. we go. So that part about it, I love. It's just being kind of like not knowing what is going to be happening from moment to moment.
Yeah.
I mean, and there are moments of, you know, boredom, and there are moments of where it's really difficult. And but then there's all these moments of incredible joy when you can figure out something that makes the person just, like, spark. Oh, and, like,
yes.
it's so cool. And it really, like, I was so burnt out on trying to, like, do all my little writing things and performing things myself. Like, it felt, and I don't think this for everybody, you know, but it's hard to keep going sometimes. And it's like, I do think of, like, somebody I want to make laugh, like friends, I want to, you know, write something that will make them laugh. But I also just never had, and this is not being self-deprecating, I just have never had that sense that, like, oh, I've got this thing to write and everybody's really got to hear it, you know?
Right.
Like I never had, like, I've got this message that I've got to get out. It was just sort of like, oh, I've got these, like, weird stories about stuff and I want to write them down because I've always felt that I'm a better thinker when I'm writing than when I'm talking. I feel like I'm not as articulate as I wish I was. Hmm. And so when I found this thing, being a dementia caregiver, I just really was like, I feel like I'm being my best self right now. Like, it brings me to a place with myself that feels so good.
Yeah.
That it sort of became addictive and like, also, you know, there's so many people are so difficult who have dementia, but when they like you, it's like, you know, when you have those people in your life where people are like, oh, that guy's such an asshole, I hate him, and you're like, but he likes me, you know? And like, when somebody who's difficult likes you, it's just sort of this little win, and it's kind of fun, and you want to keep it going.
Yes.
So there was that too. Like, it was definitely selfish in that way, that I was like, oh, this makes me feel really good.
Which, that's kind of like the best version of that, because, you know, we've all had exactly what you're saying. Like, I've definitely had people in my life where I have watched them actively behave poorly towards people I respect and care about. And then you feel horrible for being like, wait, why am I celebrating that this pit bull of a person, no offense to pities, they're wonderful and sweet, but like the cliche of, like, oh, this creature that is, you know, mercurial and people are intimidated by, and in some cases may be getting away with stuff that they absolutely shouldn't, but I still feel a little bit of a thrill that they like me. Like, that's so much more complicated than the scenario of, like, look, this is a very specific situation. There are actual medical reasons why this person is being a bit of a beast.
Yeah.
And so you could sort of strip away the, like, oh, well, this is just like a bully. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry about the bully liking you, because this is a very specific situation. And what a win when, you know, they take to you.
Yeah, because, I mean, my first guy, Bill, was such a jerk. You know, and he was raised on the Upper East Side, very wealthy. He had, you know, he was a doctor. He was the head of the nephrology department at Mount Sinai.
Oh my God.
He got everything he ever
wanted.
So I was like, are we at, like, Trader Joe's on the Upper West Side, and there's a 150 person line, and he's walking to the front because that's what he would have just done anyway.
You know? Oh, totally.
And we have these little cards that you carry around and you hand them to people, like, please excuse my friend, he has a brain injury. And like, just because people will get so mad. I mean, he almost got punched constantly.
Oh God, I bet. In New York, are you kidding me?
Oh yeah. I know.
That is so, that's really something. Let me ask you this. It is a very awkward segue, but I probably could have pulled it off if I had not drawn attention to it. But if you told teenage you, like if teenage you received the information that this would be something that you would discover and feel this real joy in doing, would that surprise teenage you? Or would you be like, yeah, I could see that.
I could have seen it. Yeah. I could have seen it. I did have I've always loved older people. Just hanging out with, you know, hearing stories from older people. And like with Porchlight, the storytelling series that I do with Arlene, we always try to get people who are older, just because the stories are so incredible. And an old person always kills at a storytelling show, you know,
because
it's just so amazing. And it is true that you know, they get really invisible as they get older. And to be able to hear stories from older people is so fantastic. So, and I did have a guy that I volunteered with when I was in high school, whose name was Sigurd, he was Norwegian, I think. And his wife had died. And I would go over there after high school, I think one day a week, you know, for a couple hours and hang out with him. So I feel like, I could have seen it.
Absolutely. Seen it. Yeah. Where was this? Where was Sigurd? Where were you? Where were you going to high school?
I grew up in Saratoga, California, which is in the Bay Area. Bay Area.
How did you come to volunteer with Sigurd?
You know, I think it was something through high school. I just went to a public high school, but I think there was some program and a couple friends and I were like, oh, this sounds fun. Like, let's go. I still have a watch, actually, that he gave me and he didn't have dementia. His wife had just died and he was just super lonely. I remember he gave me his wife's watch and I told the, you know, volunteer coordinator and I told the who called his daughter and she's like, oh, that's, you know, we already got everything from the house that we want. Like, you can have it.
That's so good. That was so conscientious of you. I mean, you're just good people, Beth. You're just good people. I mean, yeah, when I was younger than high school and I sort of wish I had waited. When I was younger than high school, I did some volunteering and it took me to like a memory care nursing home. And I was destroyed emotionally. I can't do this. And then I felt so terrible for not, you know, being able to handle it. But I think if I had waited a little bit longer, but you know, when you're just like so raw as a kid, that's, you know, that's intense. And also like, going to a nursing home is, I think, maybe a slightly different experience than the one-on-one.
When I first moved to New York, my friend Gary Glazner was working at the New York Memory Center doing a poetry project with people with Alzheimer's and dementia. And I would go and help him sometimes. And I was actually really, tentative and like didn't know what to do, and I always just was kind of following his lead, but I didn't engage the people myself at first. Like I just didn't know how to be at all, you know. And especially in a group setting, it was like there's so many people and it was just like it was kind of disconcerting to figure out how to do anything. And he's there leading these poetry workshops where they're coming up with like the craziest shit, so good. I hope somebody is making a documentary or something about his Alzheimer's poetry project.
Good heavens, me too. I'm so curious.
But I get it. I get it. It's difficult. And then I find that one-on-one, it's so much easier for me. But that's how I am actually in real life too. Like, I'm not a big group person. I get really I kind of shut down in a group.
Do you have siblings?
I have two older, I had an older brother, and this is, I have two older brothers. My oldest brother died in 2015, and this was also, I think, a big part of the story, is that he was born with cerebral palsy, but then he also had, as we found out or, you know, figured out later that he was definitely autistic. But we didn't know that then because he was born in 1965 and there was, you know, the whole spectrum thing. It was like, as my mom says, you know, if he wasn't like spinning plates like they saw in 60 Minutes, sure. like kids with, you right, know, autism, right. you didn't, it was just sort of like, oh, he's a little funny. He's a little, yeah. has a strange way about him, you know? And
well, and two, I would imagine that something that is immediately identifiable and diagnosable can take, you know, can sort of overshadow other things that you might or might not know or see because you sort of have this like, well, there's, this is what he has.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, there's no room for, you know, anything
yeah.
else.
And I think, you know, with his cerebral palsy, it just affected his left-hand side. So his left side was, like, smaller. And, you know, he walked with a limp. He couldn't grab things with his left hand. He had a lot of surgeries on his eye because it was kind of cross-eyed. And, yeah, so I think a lot of that, growing up with a brother who was, I saw, routinely teased and made fun of. And, you know, just, like, it was heartbreaking. And I think I definitely know that that's part of the thing why I'm just kind of gravitate toward like, oh, let me get in there with this
yeah.
person. Like when I started with Bill, it was shortly after Paul died, my brother Paul died. And it was, there was definitely something about the way that Bill's autism presented itself that was similar to how my brother spoke, kind of very formal and, you know, okay, well, we're doing, you know, just kind of direct. And so they reminded me of each other in a way. And I think that that had a lot to do with why I was so, you know, engaged and enamored with Bill, because it was just kind of like, all right, you need a buddy. I'm going to be your New York City
totally.
Buddy. And we are going to like tear this town up. And I mean, he, cause
I'm going to have my cards at my side.
Oh my God.
Come what may.
Yeah. He just wanted to do everything, Bill. You know, he just wanted to, he wanted to go to the opera. We went to the ballet. We went to every museum. He was like a big donor to the museums. And so his name is on the wall at the Met and at MoMA. And
wow.
And,
wow.
I mean, we would like ride the stupid carriages in Central Park, you know, like just, I don't know. It was so fun.
For him, was part of, I mean, was that sort of in response to understanding what was happening to him and being like, I'm going to get the most out of each moment that I can under these circumstances?
I think so. Because he, like, as time went on, he really lost a lot of his language. He barely had a vocabulary when he died. And, but he had a picture of his brain scan on his phone and he was always looking at it. And, he was always determined to like do things to try to stop the disease from progressing. You know, so it was like, oh, if you play these games, you know, but
yeah.
God, eventually people with dementia really get addicted to their phones. I see that a lot. With the happiest person that I've ever had is somebody who did not have a smartphone.
Is
a guy
up here.
Yeah. 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 It's so frustrating as it is with, I mean, I feel that way all the time, you know, but it's like, yeah, it's like looking at it and like, because you're getting a reaction out of it. Colors are happening. Yeah. Things are happening, you know, and they just get fixated and just want to keep, you know, I mean, his family had to like, he had a brother and sister. He didn't have any kids. So it was his brother and sister who were kind of in charge of him. And it was they're like, he is charging like thousands of dollars on these games. Like we had to figure, you know, and I didn't realize it because he'd just sit there at the, you know, whatever, in the back of a cab on his phone for a while. He'd be like, I don't know what he's doing. Yeah. And then it was
oh,
okay, I got to figure out what he's
doing. The perfect candidate for making a game, making a ton of money. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally.
So your high school was public.
Yeah. Public high school.
How was it? Like, what did it feel like? Was it huge? Was it still kind of little? Were you seeing people that you had kind of grown up around in high school? Or was there like a diversity of experience and humanity as you went through matriculation? Is that the word?
Hello,
that's what I mean.
I love that you used the word matriculation. I matriculated in an orderly fashion throughout the public school system in Saratoga. It's a wealthy community. I lived in the, you know, in the flats, you know, but there were four elementary schools that fed into the high school. I think the high school was 1,000 people, so not overly huge, but not tiny. Very white, Asian also, but very few Black people. But it was like, by the time I was probably Like my best friend is still my, you know, my best friend from second grade. She grew up one house away from me. We walked to elementary school together. And it, so it was, it, it felt very much like there were a lot of people that I went to high school with that I'd known since I was really little.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, I think by the end of it, I mean, I was definitely ready to get out, but I didn't hate it. And I didn't, I was a student body vice president and I was a runner and, you know, track and field athlete. Held the school record for the long jump for a very long time.
I
recently heard that it was broken. Maybe only 5 years ago. So
holy
I had
shit.
This record for like 25 years.
Wait, that's huge because isn't a part of the, I mean, not to like get all into athletics, but part of the whole thing about generations that follow is like, oh, you know, all the records get that used to be humans could only run X fast. And then now they're breaking that record all the time.
Right.
So this idea of like, no, this was extraordinary and preserved for decades afterwards feels like a big fucking deal.
I know. I remember what it felt like in the air at that track meet, flying through the air. I never went as far. I mean, obviously I didn't go as far because that was a record, but I never even came close. Like it was like something happened that day. And I can remember feeling like going through the air and being like, whoa, this is wild. Like I'm still going. So that was cool.
Do you have flying dreams? Do you have like flying or bounding dreams?
I have flying dreams. I do a lot of like lucid dreaming. I can't remember where I learned that trick where it's like you look at your fingertips and you follow it back to your arm, back to your body, and when you realize you're connected to your body through your hand, that you can then tell yourself, ah, I'm dreaming. This is my body and my dream.
I don't think I've ever heard that technique. That's very cool.
Yeah. I can't remember where I heard that, but I do have a very, during the pandemic, I had a lot of lucid dreaming moments of flying. It's always like flying, fucking, or swimming along the bottom of the ocean.
Whoa. That's cool.
Those are the three things I can do. Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, so the swimming on the bottom of the ocean, I've never had that dream, I don't think. I definitely have water dreams, but they are, I think, more the sort of traditional, like, you know, am I safe in these ways? Or like, is there a shark underneath me, maybe?
Right, yeah.
So I think those are more kind of like, however people discuss, you know, Jungian experience of what that represents. But what are you, when you're swimming on the bottom of the ocean, are you like engaging with what's there and kind of seeing and experiencing?
I'm trying to look at what's there. So usually what happens is like, I'll start flying and then I'll go, oh wait, I'm having a dream that I'm flying. I'm going to go to the bottom of the ocean. So then I dive into the bottom of the ocean and then I can either swim or sometimes kind of walk. Like in slow motion. And then I just try to look around at like the sea life. And there's never anybody else down there that I can think of. But it's just a thing that I think that, you know, that I remember that I can do.
Yeah.
And I don't get very far. You know, it doesn't go that far. Like I feel like it's not... where some of the flying dreams feel really epic, the ocean dreams or the having sex dreams are also just like, wait, I'm married, right? Eli's next to me in bed, right? Like, but it's okay, right? Because it's a dream. Like this is a, you know, it's like I go through this weird thing. And same with the ocean one too. It's like, this is okay that I can't breathe, right? It's like, because I can breathe down here because it's my dream. And so those are more fraught. But so it's the flying ones where I really feel like I go through, like move through the windows of my bedroom and all that stuff.
That's great.
I know. I really love it.
The reason that I thought of it is that when you were describing the long jump situation, like I do have dreams that I'm flying sometimes, but so much more often, so much more consistently, they're dreams where I am just not, I can't tell you how many dreams I've had where I realize I don't have to let my feet touch the ground as much as other people do.
Uh-huh.
So it's still very grounded, so to speak, in some sort of dream reality where I'm like around people. And at some point I like decide to let them in on the fact that I'll be, and that becomes important in the dream. It becomes important for me to be like, hey, watch this. and watch how far I get without having to then spring off the ground again.
Oh my God, it
you've been thinking that I'm walking at like a normal person.
Just you wait.
But I'm walking on air.
Oh.
And every once in a while, I just need to touch back down to get enough, you know, just get a little buoyancy.
Right.
And then I'm once again like, no, no, it looks like I'm walking. But if you take a closer look, I'm just floating.
Because you said something in the beginning about bounding, right?
Yeah, it's a real bad. It's like I am going so much higher and further than you would think. And once in a while, it sort of escalates into the lucidity of like, wait a minute, if I can do this,
yeah,
I better just float right up into. And then I take that, and then I do. I'm sort of like amongst the trees, and like then it turns into like I'm looking, you know, much higher in a bird's eye view. But yeah, so often it just starts with like. Yeah, I guess I'm a really good runner.
Yeah,
I guess I'm just not getting tired.
I think it's also something like it might be something in your subconscious, your unconscious mind that is like that you're like, just you wait. Like I can do this.
Yeah.
You know, like I can do these things, and I might look like, and it might even be just to yourself, like, oh,
yeah,
I'm going along doing these things in my life, but it's like actually I have a lot of power or a lot of, you know, there's a lot of places
that
I can go. You know, and I don't know. I think that sometimes about my flying dreams, that it's like, oh, am I feeling like trapped? Like I need to get out, and that I can, but I'm not doing it. And I also have those dreams where it's like to the people around me, like, oh, wait, just you wait. Like I do have that too, that it's just sort of like, this isn't all what it looks like, you know, something else is going on here.
Yeah. Okay. Two questions off of that. Number one, in your experiences with interacting with and communing with dementia patients, or not even patients, however you want to think of it, but are there dreams? Are people remembering dreams and talking to you about them? Is there dreaming happening that you ever are privy to?
There is. I think I had one client who slept a lot, and she would often confuse what was happening with if it was a dream, or she would be, it would seem like she'd be awake in her bed, but she was having this whole thing going on that she thought was a dream, but maybe she was just remembering something. So she was often confused about whether it was a dream or whether it was a memory.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think if I had another. My guy Tom, who lived up here, was a poet, and he had about 1,000 poems that he had never published. He was a civil engineer. He went to MIT.
Oh, wow.
But his whole life he wrote poems. And so in his dementia, he just became fascinated with his poems, and he just wanted to read them and have me read them to him and him read them to me. And in those poems, there were lines about dreams that he had. So we would talk about his dreams, and sometimes he would say, oh, that happened last night. Like it would be a something in his poem that he'd written 10 years ago that was a dream, but he would then like later that week say that he dreamed that, you know. So I don't know if it was like bringing up, it's a weird thing. I don't know. It gets really confusing. Like what's reality? What's a dream? What's a memory?
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Yeah, my whole, like, when my mom first started exhibiting signs, I was so traumatized by it, having still had, I mean, both my grandfathers had dementia, but, you know, when it's your parent, you just never feel like you're old enough to deal with it.
Yeah.
And so I became, like, really fixated on the idea of, like, Alzheimer's or dementia as time travel. Like, no, no, it's time travel. It's real. We aren't seeing it happen because we can't, you know, our experience of quantum mechanics and time don't allow us to see what our elders who are like becoming, you think it's becoming rigid, and we talk about it as this sort of like solidifying of and channels that narrow and stuff, but what if they're just becoming more nimble instead? And it's this
way
of kind of sort of bending back into a younger version of yourself. And I think for me it was all about like, how do I tell a story when I'm feeling the most upset and afraid of her fear? Like that's what I carried around with me the most, was I just never wanted her to feel afraid.
Yeah, that's the worst.
You know, and so I really was like trying to come up with like, you know, again, just sort of ways of processing it, even if it's just through creativity or whatever, just like trying to kind of remove the fear from it. So I wasn't just obsessing over that all the time.
Being able to access, I mean, that's incredible that you could do that. I mean, I guess it's like coping mechanism and like,
I don't know if I was very good at it, but
how, but really like if, yeah, I mean, I want to keep that in mind. You know, that's like such a cool thing to think about because there's so many little tricks you have to play with yourself and with them when you're interacting.
Especially because, you know, that's one of the things that I remember hearing very early, but not so early that it was like that it hasn't been a more recent development in terms of how we handle folks who are experiencing some sort of hallucination or just some sort of memory little kink in the system or whatever that you know, and maybe you'll know much better than me, but like I've always been told, like, don't correct them. It's not help, like, by and large, that is only terrifying information.
Yeah.
It's not going to snap anybody back, like, oh yeah, or maybe it does sometimes depending on what the person is, but that it's more, you know, it's more kind to sort of like, well, let's see where this goes.
Yeah, I think almost that's entirely true for almost every situation. It's just so much better to just go along with it because also then you can redirect or something else happens and then that goes away. So that little thing, whatever it was that you were, you know, pretending was happening that wasn't really happening or whatever, like you get to go in that, be in that moment with them. And then it all changes so quickly that it's like, what's the harm in doing that? It's much better because I think I found some of that with trial and error because I had a very intellectual literature professor from an Ivy League school who was very stern and hard on herself. And she knew she was forgetting things and she was so bad to herself, you know, she just was so mad at herself. And so sometimes she would try to engage me in these more intellectual discussions of what was happening, and I would think, well, this is her world, this is what she's used to, like, let me try this, you know. And it would always went bad, like it was like she just always got so frustrated. And so she would want to know, like, did I really meet that woman in the elevator who says she knows my name? Because I've never seen her before in my life. And I don't like it when people in the elevator talk to me that I don't, you know, and I'm like, I don't think you do. She's like, no, I want you to tell me. And I'm like, you may have met her in the dining room, you know, and then it just, she just goes down this whole thing and she feels terrible. And she doesn't want to go to the dining room to eat anymore because she's going to be embarrassed by not remembering people's faces or names or whatever, you know? So, yeah. For the most part, goodness. I feel like just go along with it if you can.
Well, no, and you're right about the sort of resets that happen in surprising moments and like a physical, just like I walked her out of a room. And once we walked into that new room, it was amazing that the sort of like, it's like you tear off a fresh sheet of a calendar, like, shit, there you go. Now we have a totally new situation.
Yep, totally. You can be like, all right, we're going to do a funny thing. I'm going to go to the door. I'm going to stand outside in the hallway. I'm going to knock, okay? And then when I knock, you pretend that you're whatever. You just like make it a game. And like, you know, a lot of times it's like if you can be a game, but it's also exhausting. But
I could not be more sure that's true.
But can be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay. And so my second question, peeling off of the dream thing, is were you a teenager who wrote in journals and did you keep sort of entries about either dreams or not that, but just like all of the deepest feelings and thoughts that you were having as a young person?
I had some diaries when I was in elementary school, and then in high school I did more dream journals, and I love a dream journal. Do you keep one?
I go through phases, yeah, and then it just totally fall off. But I wish I do love, and you were just whether or not I ever look back at a thing I wrote down, it cements it so differently and makes it so much more special and like vivid when you take that time to write it down.
I know. I should get back on mine too. I haven't done it in probably 6 months, but when I read the dreams, even ones that I had 10, 15 years ago, I can remember them again as if they, I mean,
that's so
just
cool.
So clear. But then after, I'm trying to think, like, probably by the time I graduated from high school, I wasn't a big reader. It's really funny and embarrassing or whatever to admit, but it's like I did what I had to do to get through high school and all that. Like, I did fine and all, you know, and I knew I was going to go to college because, you know, it was just like expected. And I, you know, it sounded fun or whatever, but I was not a very academic, bookish person. And it wasn't until after I graduated from college that I started writing and reading. That, I was just like, I don't know. When I was going to college, I started working as a baker. And then I was just like, oh, I'm just going to be a baker. I'm going to be a pastry chef. This is what I do. I don't have to, you know, I'm on my way. And it wasn't until I discovered like the open mic scene in San Francisco that I was like, oh, you can just show up and like read something that's like a conversation you overheard on the bus or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started writing. But so I didn't, I wasn't like, I don't know. All the people I love were like those kind of nerdy, bookish, you know, big readers, big journal keepers and all that. And it was, that wasn't me as a teenager.
Well, I know you were running track and field, so that's obviously a passion. Yeah.
Very busy running around the field.
Very busy running around setting records.
Yeah.
What were you excited about? Like, were you a movie buff? Were you, like, super into music?
I was into music. I had, like, three good friends, and we were, like, into music. We would go see shows because we could go in the Bay Area. We could take BART to Gilman Street. So we did that. Sure. We also did a lot of, like, pranks. Like, I don't know. We would go like take the megaphone from the school student body office. And then like on a Friday night, we would hide in the bushes at the Jack in the Box with the megaphone and the car would pull up and we'd be like, gonna take care of her, please. Like try to talk to people and say stuff. Like,
why have I never heard of doing that before? That's brilliant.
It's really funny because people giving you their order, but then the real person comes on. It gets really confusing. We had something called the produce mobile that we would do. My friend had a station wagon and we would go to Safeway and just buy produce and we would duct tape it all over her shitty station wagon and then just drive through the streets with vegetables.
You were doing sketch comedy, dude.
Yeah, I think
you were making sketch comedy for life.
I didn't think of it that way, but it was just like we weren't partiers. And so we would sometimes go to the parties. We hid in closets and under beds at parties.
Oh, that is so satisfying.
It was satisfying. I got older to know like, oh, okay, I never got fucked up in front of anybody I went to high school with. I didn't have sex with anybody I went to high school with. Like, it was just totally. Like, it felt like that felt like a relief. So we were just kind of like biding our time, like in this, our suburban world, like waiting to move on to something.
God, there's something about, have you written about hiding in closets at parties?
No.
Oh, it's great. Because there's something about that that's so... That feels like it, and immediately as soon as you said it, I was like, God, I wish I would have done that. And it's such a small thing, but I think it just taps in so immediately to just the idea of being, you know, we all look, the worst version of this is QAnon. The very worst version of this, okay, I'm jumping right to the like, don't do this at home is QAnon. But it's that feeling of feeling like you're on the inside of something, like you're part of this larger framework.
Right.
But you've created this otherness for yourself that allows, you know, that sort of gives you that like,
oh my God,
I mean, we're here, but like we're hiding in the closet and we're experiencing this. That's also very writerly in a way, because it is sort of like journalistic in the sense that you're like,
whatever.
I'm here, but I don't have to expose any part of myself to still experience
exactly
like other people's moments or vulnerabilities or social, you know, quirks.
A coping thing with like, wow, all these kids, cause as I said, like we knew a lot of these kids from second grade, third grade, whatever. And we're like, whoa, these people are like doing drugs and having sex and getting wasted. And we were just like, we didn't want to do that. Cause I mean, I think part of it, we were just scared, you know, it's also why I've never really done drugs. It's just like, I'm just like, it's a little bit of a control thing. Like, I'm like, I don't know who I would be on drugs. Maybe I would fucking love it or, you know, I don't know. But I think part of it was that, like, well, if we're not going to participate in that way, like, let's just sort of like, I don't know, do something kind of clownish that just feels like goofy and funny. And I don't know.
But, that's great.
Yeah, it was. It was really fun. It was
and what kind of music? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just that I had good friends and I we had a good time in our little funny little circle.
What? How big was that circle? Like what? Like if you were doing when you did the Produce Mobile, was it you? It's you, your friend who had the station wagon, and then
it was me, Amy, Nicole, and Cynthia, four of us. Right. And Amy's my friend since second grade, who was lived on my block, and then Juan, which is his name was John. He's in our Spanish class. And Chris, who, you know, of course, our best guy friends were gay, but not in high school because, mm-hmm. I mean, they knew to each other, but we didn't right. know, or maybe we sort of knew.
Those
or
weren't
whatever.
Conversations necessarily happening.
Yeah.
In the open,
so yeah. And then Chris had a twin brother, Craig, who may or may not have done the Produce Mobile with us. So maybe six of us.
Yeah. I also think it's amazing. I mean, I had friends who. I definitely have friends that I'm still friends with from when I was little, even though I did kind of like bop around in the school system and because there were magnet programs and stuff. So it would be like, oh, now I'm at a school where I only know five people. And then suddenly I would see a bunch of people I went to elementary school with in the next version of school. But to have kids who were like friends of convenience, and I don't mean that in a like a derogatory way towards them, because I'm sure they felt the same about me, where it was like we lived in the same neighborhood. I don't know that we had that much in common, but I was an only child and I spent a lot of time alone. And then there were people where it'd be like, I mean, I guess I could go over to so-and-so's house, like I don't know. You know, they have a dog, I don't know. You know, and so there was that sort of thing. So and then I had friends who lived, you know, across the city because we met in preschool. And there was such a slog for our poor parents to have to like each drive 30 minutes each way to meet at the Burger King that was, you know, where we could, that one kid would get out and get in with the other family and like, they'd be like, see you at the end of the weekend. But I love that this person is so close to you and also lived, you know, just like feet away from you.
I know. We talk about that all the time. Like, we're like, wow, we really changed each other's lives. Like, I am a complete, so much of who I am is because she was my best friend and I grew up with her, you know? And we go, you know, a long time without talking. And
sure.
But it's like, we're very influenced also by her older sister who was cool and was into like mod music and so you know and fashion.
That was my question,
like
actually
that.
The question I was gonna ask was like what kind of music were you guys going to see like when you were going to see music?
Yeah, definitely from Amy's older sister Jennifer, we got the kind of the specials and you know the Jam and like that whole British scene, the Who, you know, the Kinks, like and so that became definitely the first time I remember really being like, as a teenager, like 14 maybe, like, oh, I'm going to get like a blunt bob haircut.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just wear like army pants and boots and, you know.
Yeah. Very much so.
I liked that look. I was like, this is a good look.
It is a good look. It remains a good look.
Still,
I feel it's timeless.
It still is a good look.
It's
right?
absolutely a great look. And I will say also that... that type of music and like I would extend that a little bit further out to like slightly later with like the Violent Femmes and the Pixies and stuff. Like
absolutely.
Those are bands that actually I can fully imagine them sitting off to the side in a bush with a megaphone, like taking someone's drive through order. Like just some light snark, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so just like nobody's getting hurt here, you know.
Yeah.
But this
there was an element to it that was definitely snarky that, you know, now as a you know, mature adult feels like, oh, okay, yeah, we were definitely being a little bit like, oh, we're not gonna be, you know, getting wasted on Jägermeister at Jenny Chavez's house. You know, we're gonna, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I feel like, I would say that teen Beth and teen Janet would have done just fine. Although, for some reason, it's still shocking to me that I like took drugs when I did. And because it doesn't,
right,
in many ways, it doesn't like jive with like the kind of person, like all of the things that you're saying are all things that I kind of also felt. And then it really was. I mean, I hate to be like the influence of few other people, and I wouldn't change anything. But boy, that all flew away as soon as I like fell in like love with some, you know, with like a person that I was just so taken by, and she thought it was a good idea. I mean, I think I was like And I'm not even, and I think she might say the same thing about me. I think it was like a folie à deux, you know, where you're just like, yeah. Suddenly we're invincible. Let's do it. You know, like, wow, that was a flip switch that happened quick, you know? Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a great thing, though, about being a teenager. Just those feelings of just like, here we go.
Yeah.
Like, you and me, we can do this.
Adrenaline, baby.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
But again, got very lucky in some ways because could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah. We're all glad you're here.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Max Fun Drive 2024.
Max Fun Drive? What about it?
It'll be the best time for someone to support the podcasts they love.
Oh, yeah. Drive exclusive gifts, special events, and of course, all the amazing bonus content.
Yeah.
So, what's on your mind? Check.
Well, it starts March 18th, and it's only 2 weeks long.
And? Check.
Well, what if they miss it?
Well, they should follow Max Fun on social media, or sign up for the newsletter at MaximumFun.org/newsletter, so they don't miss it. Otherwise, checkmate.
It's hard to explain what happens on Jordan, Jesse, Go.
So, I had my kids do it.
Saying swear words.
Saying swear words.
Yeah, bad jokes.
Bad jokes?
Bad jokes. Maybe it's like you tell people that you're going to interview them, and then you just stay there like really quiet and try and creep them out.
It's just really boring.
Because of Jordan, right? Not me.
Because of both of you.
Oh.
Subscribe to Jordan, Jesse, Go,
a comedy show for grown-ups.
All right, I got to get into this MASH game with you. My first MASH category, first time ever coming up from this conversation. Don't know how it's going to go, but I want to do a MASH category in this alternate universe we're creating for you where... Okay. We are creating three new types of dreams that you can kind of conjure whenever you fall asleep. If you want to have like a, I'm walking through this city that I don't get to see, or like I'm seeing this person from my life that I no longer get to talk to. Like, or just like completely whimsical. Like, no, I would like to be in the Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory and just pick out. Like, that'd be a really fun dream to be able to access whenever I wanted. Three dreams that you can, we're going to give you the ability to potentially just have whenever you want them.
Let's say one is sort of a Groundhog Day dream so that it's the same set of circumstances, but that I can do all sorts of different things in it and see what the reaction to those things are, right?
So great.
Groundhog Day dream, exact
Love
same
it.
Dream.
Love it.
Different test subject. And then this is sort of, I would like to be, have like a world, like, God, like a 1970s New York.
Great.
That's just a dream world where I can do whatever I want and just go into that world whenever I want to and actually be a person with like an apartment and you know, friends and like have my, but it's a dream world that I create and go back to. I like
love
that.
It.
Oh, and here's the other one.
Great.
All my dementia clients as before they had dementia, because I don't know who a lot of them were.
Yes.
I have no idea who the hell they were beforehand.
Oh my God, yes.
So that would be so cool to go to sleep and be in this world where all of a sudden it's like, I'm like, oh my God, that's Prudence and that's Bill and that's Roz and that's Tom.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's genius. I love it.
Oh,
all right.
That sounds so fun.
Okay, next one. Three, foods that in this reality, perhaps you just can't eat at the same volume that you could when you were younger because it's not going to taste as, you're going to feel sick or you feel as ecologically responsible or maybe you have an allergy to it or it's something that you had that's so far away that you would have to travel to that place to have it. In this reality, everything has no ramifications whatsoever to you or anyone else, and you can have it's not the only thing you eat, but you can have these three things in perpetuity at the snap of your fingers wherever you are, whatever you want.
Oh my God, I think the whole hostess family of snack cakes. You know, like I used to have those a lot when I was little, and I try to go back there, and it's, you know, I eat really healthy now and it just doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I know,
that,
I do too.
It doesn't taste good. I taste it. I'm like, it tastes like plastic. This tastes terrible. Yeah. But that's, oh, I want that.
To experience it as in the old days. Yes.
Yes.
Love it. Perfect. All right. Two more.
Okay. I have never, again, had a certain eggplant parmesan that I had in Italy in 1990. And it was, I've never seen it before since. Every little layer was the most wafer thin layer of eggplant, but yet it was fried, but not greasy.
Yeah.
And had a little crispy, but like it would be like you'd have a stack like from a like a 9x11 pan, and there would be like 25 or 30 layers of eggplant because it was so thin.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
That sounds
I've never seen it since.
Wonderful. Ugh. When eggplant is good, it's a magical vegetable.
Yeah. And when it's bad and you try to make it yourself.
Ugh. I mean, I've definitely done that. And been
like,
what?
You're
like, no.
Well, I guess I'm just eating this
why did
tonight.
Yeah. All right. What's number three?
Okay. Number three. I think number three is like oysters, lobster, shell, you know, all that stuff that it's like I could eat that every day. And I feel like I'm probably getting mercury poisoning when I eat too much seafood. Like I love seafood. So
great.
And I feel like I'm depleting the oceans.
Potentially not in this world. So don't you even worry. Okay.
Those are the
Next one, three places in the world that we can kind of teleport you to, and we're giving you another home there. So it can be a getaway home. It can be a fully immersed in a busy other culture, like however you want to utilize your other home in this other place. And again, you don't have to sit on a plane to get there. We're gonna be able to sort of teleport you there through.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Let's go Sicily, where I've never been.
Me neither.
It just sounds magical to me, and I really want to go. So I would love that. Just sort of a, you know, existence on the water, and like that just sounds so nice.
Great.
And just like a crazy wild culture. Hawaii. I'm going Beautiful. To Kauai. I'm just going to another oceanfront place, but this is like having meals with windows open, breeze blowing in, you know, just like that. It's just super relaxing. I feel like the Sicily thing has a more chaotic element. This
Agreed.
One is the
You're getting
relaxing,
something totally different here. Absolutely.
And I don't even feel like a basic bee for saying Hawaii. I feel like it's gorgeous there.
Let's not pretend that it's not a magical, beautiful, special place.
No, it is. Okay. And Iceland.
Yes, Iceland, indeed.
Where I've been only once, but I loved that. I loved all the people that I met. I saw Bjork.
You did?
Iceland?
Oh my God. Now everyone's going to be like, I assume I'll see Bjork.
Yeah.
I'm in Iceland. I can only assume I'll see Bjork.
It was a performance. I knew I was going to see her. Was it just on the street?
That makes a little more sense. It would have been extraordinary if you bumped into her at the store. What a fun, but like, seeing Bjork in Iceland.
Yeah, beautiful. In the round, in this theater. That was like, she was in the round. It was just amazing. Okay. Iceland.
Great. Love it. All right, next one. All due respect to your amazing husband, Eli. In this alternate universe, I don't know where he is. It's just not. It doesn't align up the same way. So three people. Now they could be characters from books, films, someone from an age and era long gone. We're gonna. All of that is sort of suspended. Movies, whatever you want. Three people, three romantic partners. I'm not committing your life to this person. It can be as long or as short of an affair as you want. It could be one night.
Okay.
It could be a lifetime. I don't care. Three.
Okay. Here we go. Because this I know. Because I've always had a thing for fucking Steve Buscemi.
Great.
I love him. I just love him.
He's wonderful.
That's a known factor in my world. We share the same birthday.
Oh, nice.
I didn't know that for years. Okay. Steve Buscemi. Let's go for not Don Cheadle, but Don Cheadle as Buck Swope in Boogie Nights.
Oh, great.
When he's
great,
selling
great.
The stereos.
Yeah.
And he has his straight job selling the stereos and he's describing them. And he's just like, I fell in love with that.
He's
character.
Dreamy. He's dreamy.
Oh, right. And then Beautiful. He did Hotel Rwanda like after that. And I was like, who is this person?
Yeah.
And then Tilda Swinton, Tilda Swinton.
Absolutely.
Love.
Absolutely. Okay. All right.
Does everybody say Tilda Swinton?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I completely and totally agree with you. I couldn't be more. The only reason that I would maybe not do it is that, like, I'm so afraid I would be like, I don't get. Can I touch your face?
I know.
Should I?
Yeah,
I shouldn't. I don't know why I asked that. I'm so sorry. I know we're in a relationship,
When I picture it, I just picture us wearing like very nice clothes. Like I've been allowed to wear something from her wardrobe, and we're just sitting in some like exquisite location, just like sipping tea or coffee or a cocktail, or just like I don't know. My mind can't even go to what happens after that.
Yeah.
I just want to be in that.
I love
with
it.
Her, whatever she's doing.
It. Okay, beautiful. All right, next one. Three movies that you can jump into whenever you want. You're not reliving the plot. You're just in that world, having whatever fun experience of the feelings of that place. Could be totally otherworldly, or it could be, again, like the 1970s New York of Blake.
Yeah, let's go Grey Gardens for sure. I mean... I want to know. I want to talk to them. I want to know. I want to be there. I want to see it all.
Yes.
Woman Under the Influence.
Ooh.
Cassavetes.
Yeah.
That Los Angeles of that time.
Yes.
And just that world is, I would love to have been in the Cassavetes Los Angeles world.
I don't think I've watched a single Cassavetes movie since I lived here. I should revisit now that I have this whole different map.
Yeah, I bet you'd recognize.
Of everything.
I bet you'd recognize a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
I'm making a reminder to myself.
God.
Okay. Woman of the Influence. Wonderful.
And did you see, I think I'm remembering this correctly, Let the Right One In, the Swedish vampire movie. It's so beautiful.
That vibe.
And just it's so dark and like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know how I would live in that world, but I just want to be there and feel what it feels like. I don't know.
Yeah.
So much of this is about wanting to know the feeling of being immersed in that environment.
Absolutely. There is no way that I'm trying to think like if I've ever, I mean, I'm sure someone has played it back to me where I had to pick movies, but there is no way that somewhere in here, there would need to be like a very moody, snowy climb. I'm so freaking drawn to that stuff. It's outrageous.
Yeah, me too. And it's funny because all three of those that I picked are kind of dark, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like I could handle it. I feel like I want to be in there and just know.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. All right. Next category. Let's do three alternate universe careers. It's or just other kind of odd jobs. Like it doesn't, you don't have to do it full time. You can like dabble here, check this out, try this on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Number one for sure is a dancer. I wish that's the one thing in my waking life, almost every day, I think I wish I had been a dancer. I love to dance. There's just like that world to me is so fascinating.
Yeah.
So dancer number one. Modern dancer.
Modern.
Number two, surgeon of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see what it looks like in there.
Great.
And, I would love to be like a park ranger. Like a person out in the park. I don't know. It seems like there's so many different kind of jobs you could do.
Yeah. I think that's true.
So, yeah. Park ranger.
Great, great, great. Okay. Second to last category. Give me three... this seems like something that you would imagine that I would bring up all the time on MASH, and I feel like I never do. But let's do this sort of like King Arthur Merlin experience where you get to live inside of three animals for a few hours. You know, you just get to inhabit the consciousness of those animals, but you're almost taking on their consciousness in a sense where you'll remember the experience, but you're also like you're part of them, opposed to just like, I'm Beth's brain and only Beth's brain inside this strange body. Like, you know what I mean? There's a merging that's happening there.
Oh, my God. What a great question.
I never do it. I don't know why. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Thanks for inspiring me to go like, what am I doing? I got to find out what Beth's answers are going to be. Come on. Am I crazy?
I would love to be a deer. There are a lot of deer around my house, and I just, they're so weird, and they stare a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Is it nothing that's going on? Like, maybe that, I mean, really my sense is that there's absolutely nothing going on in their brains.
Yeah.
And that seems so great to just, it's absolutely nothing.
But to also just imagine what their hearing must be like,
yeah.
You know, and just
yeah.
The way the senses change depending on what animal you are, I think would just be
yeah.
so
amazing. I mean that, yeah. It's like, I feel like they're feeling and not thinking, which seems so great.
I love that.
But I mean, I guess that's what animals, who knows what's fucking going on in animals' minds.
I mean, yeah, you're the experience of being a raccoon is not the same experience as being a deer.
No,
you know what I mean? Like that raccoon is like, this is a puzzle. I will solve it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I would love to be a rat snake.
Ooh.
Which is just a snake that I see around here.
Sure.
My house that is sometimes curled around a tree branch just coming out. It's they're wild.
Yeah.
So a snake.
That's great.
Rat snake. That's just kind of an unglamorous snake, you know?
Just
like
snaking
a working
around.
A working day.
A blue collar snake. That's all I'm asking for.
Workaday snake. I want to be a lady eagle, not a man eagle, because lady eagle, as I've learned here, there's a lot of eagles' nests, and the man eagle feathers the nests and makes different nests all over the place, and then the lady eagle flies from nest to nest and decides which one she's going to lay the eggs in. It's so cool. It's like this one or this one or this one.
Yeah.
So she gets to kind of take this tour after they're all kind of set up and then decide which one gets finished.
So it goes unfinished.
It goes
just
unfinished
like, I'm just wondering if any other birds are like, thank you. Like there's some sort of, you know what I mean? Symbiosis. Yeah, there's somebody that's like, well, everyone knows ravens don't build their own nests.
Yeah.
So it really works out.
My own countertops.
Yeah. They know that they're taking second or third best, but they're fine with it. That's wonderful.
Starter nest.
I was wondering if you're going to bring a flyer in here. Bring somebody who flies.
Yeah.
So you got your lady eagle. Wonderful. Okay. And then final category. Ooh, let's say three people, you know that you are going to be writing a sort of essay about your afternoon with this person. And it can be, so three people can be from any era, any age, someone known to you, someone totally unknown to you, three people that you're interested in them enough that you know that when your assignment comes to say, like, my afternoon with so-and-so, you're like, I'm confident that I will have a rich tapestry to weave from even just that one afternoon with that person.
Okay.
No pressure.
Wow, I know. This is a tough one. This is a tough one.
Yeah.
To come up with off the cuff. But
I'm so sorry. Okay. It's an evil game. It's an evil game.
It is. It's evil, but it's so fun.
It's your last one. You don't have to worry about anything after this.
Okay, let's go John Cage.
Great.
Because I met somebody on a film, doing a film as a sound guy, and he used to live near him, and they would play poker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's just something I didn't picture, John Cage playing poker.
Just playing
you know?
Some poker,
and it's like,
no big deal.
Anybody who's thinking on that level, like, I don't, I would love to spend an afternoon with John Cage. God, I really get stuck in time periods, but I'm just going to go with it. First thought, here we go. Andy Warhol.
Great.
I'm going to say Joan Didion, even though it's terrifying.
I love that you're walking into that. I think that's fantastic.
It's so intimidating, but it's also like, I don't know. I just feel like I would just, the whole time, it would be such a mind fuck. That it would be
really
challenging.
Oh, I love it, though. I love it, though.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think, you know, at the end of the day, people love to be around her. So, you know what I mean? Like, to experience that firsthand and to see the thing to experience firsthand, the thing that you're observing the observer in that way, I think is so
right.
Like,
ugh,
you know,
gives me the chills actually thinking about it.
Oh, I
just
love it.
Feel like it would be so intimidating, but I would
great.
Do it.
Oh, it'd be great. Okay. And maybe she doesn't know that you're writing about her. Do you know what
well,
I mean?
I know.
She
does,
yeah, she doesn't know. You're just spending the afternoon with her. She doesn't know you're a writer. She doesn't know that that's
right.
You know what you're doing there.
Right. Maybe I'm just helping her. Like, maybe I'm country driver. Maybe I'm driving her somewhere.
Absolutely.
Maybe her car got a flat.
Absolutely.
And she needs a ride somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, she's hitchhiking. I pick her up.
You're experiencing her. And then you're sort of both observing. That's great. I love it. Okay.
Okay.
The only thing that's going to be hard for me is the heartbreak of I want you to get all of these across all categories. So the fact that you're going to get one from each group is
I know. I'll take them.
A little
I'll take
bit
whatever
of a,
you give me.
A little death. But okay, give me a number between 1 and 9.
6.
Okay. I'm going to go through and do the very important scientific calculations that lead to this 100% guaranteed MASH world that will belong to you. Will you tell people what they can check out, where they can enjoy anything that supports you and your wonderful work? And also, you know, if you want to extend it out to something that you experienced that you're excited about and you want to give that a plug, feel free. No pressure.
Okay. All right. I recently wrote the libretto for an opera, an Jeez. Audio opera called The Electronic Lover. And you can go to theelectroniclover.com and you can listen. It's a serialized podcast opera that the composer Lisa Metzakappa and I made during the pandemic. Amazing voices on it. And it's set in the days of the early internet when people were... So it takes place in a women's only chat room.
Oh my God, this is brilliant.
It was so fun to write. I'd never done anything like it. And there are 8 episodes out there now. So theelectroniclover.com. And then I do have a website, bethlisic.com, that I feel like, am I going to own my own name website for the rest of my life? That feels weird to me. Like,
you know
we just
what?
Do
I
that?
Also have janetvarney.com. And I guess, and I, yeah, it's just
it's
like,
it's just
I guess,
like, that's just what we do. Yes, we just, for the rest of our in perpetuity, yeah. We just own our names.com. Yeah. So so some of the things, there's some links to some books that I've written on there and the Electronic Lover stuff is on there too.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. Also, great name. Electronic Lover, are you kidding me? Wonderful. Okay. This is very exciting. Ooh, all right. Okay. I almost feel like I'm seeing a pattern emerging, but that may be just me. I don't know. I'm seeing a couple things I'm feeling real good about. Okay.
Oh, good.
First of all, I got to congratulate you on your mansion in Sicily.
Yeah.
Mansion. Your mansion in Sicily. I mean,
I'm going to be stoned by the locals, but okay.
No, you're one of those wonderful, magnanimous people who's always having like wonderful parties and like
it's the people's
you know
mansion.
The whole community.
Yeah.
It's the people's mansion.
Maybe
look, maybe you're using it to foster creative artists. Maybe you're being a benefactor of some kind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we don't
I love
know
that.
The salon night that happens every you know Sunday mm-hmm. evening and at Beth's
that
house.
Sounds
great.
Fantastic.
So that's definitely happening. You also have you're just a wonderful modern dancer, just experiencing.
I'm
the
so
life
happy.
Of a dancer. That works. That fits.
Yeah. Oh, that totally fits.
Just like richly cultural, artistic, lovely. You can jump into your own Groundhog Day dream where you're sort of getting to like see what all the butterfly effects are throughout the day. It's your choose your own adventure. With an amazing and fascinating reset that happens in this dream. If you don't feel like jumping into a dream that you might have at night, you can also jump into Let the Right One In. Whenever you want that sort of moody, interesting, complicated.
Oh my God, climbing up the side of a
building
indeed. Just with my fingers.
Yes. just with my fingers. It's a very finger-forward experience.
Yeah. Well, I'm a dancer, so it makes sense.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
I've got a very, very strong core, And of course I can do that. Oh my God.
You
okay.
You also picked, listen, you also picked three animals that have each of them in their way a kind of a grace and confidence, right? Mm. Each in their own way. What is the one that you ended up with that you really get to embody whenever you want to? And that, my friend, I hope you're ready to pick between nests because you are going to be
Lady Eagle.
Lady Eagle.
You're going to be a Lady Eagle.
I'm a Lady Eagle.
Yeah, and it's going to be amazing. You're also going to spend a little time with John Cage. Maybe play poker. I don't know. But you're going to have that experience, and then you're going to be able to write about it and share that so that we all can feel like we had that same afternoon. I don't know why you would need more than you already have, but I want you to rest assured that whenever you want to eat one of those delicious plasticky sugary Hostess treats, it is going to taste like a delicacy. It's going to give you that satisfaction that it once did. Zero ramifications, just joyful piggery.
Yeah, like just those like the cream, orange, the orange cupcakes.
Oh my God,
the flat icing.
The flat disc of ice.
Yeah, the flat disc on top with the little swirl.
Fantastic. Fantastic. That leaves us with the all important, who are you going to be doing all this with? Now listen, I may not know this person's exact lineage, but I do know that that person's name sure sounds like it might belong in Sicily, because that, my friend, is Steve Buscemi. Or Buscemi, depending on how he says it. I've never
I don't know how he even says it.
But oh my God. There okay. is your companion.
This is, this is an incredible world you've created for me.
Pretty good.
Oh, Janet. Yeah.
Well done.
How do I?
Well
how played. Do I go now and make dinner and help my mom with the, get onto her banking website now? Oh boy.
This is all, it's all there. Okay. That's why, because it's all there. You're floating inside of it, even as you help your mom. It's
okay. I'm going to work on some of those dream ideas, though.
There
that,
you go.
To me, is like, I think we can do that. Like, I think we can tell ourselves, I can create those dream worlds when I go to bed at night if I think hard enough about it. I really think I can.
I agree. I have that one of my favorite recurring dream sets that is rare but so special is that somehow my brain continues to build a city of Paris that is 100% not actual Paris, but is like, I don't know why it happens and when it does, but it's like, oh, I'm in this area. And somehow I have this innate understanding that this neighborhood is like adjacent to it. I know its relationship to other places I visited in this city, even if I don't go to that place in that particular dream. It's so strange.
Yeah.
The brain is amazing.
I have some houses like that that I visit in my dreams. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is that house. It's so weird. And it's nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah. I love it. I feel like we're both going to have great dreams tonight. And those of you listening, I want you to rest assured you're going to have some very special dreams as well. Beth, I was like, thank you so much. I kept you for such a long time. I could talk to you forever.
I know I could talk to you forever.
I just think the world of you. So I need to immediately go listen to this libretto. I mean, what am I doing? What am I doing with myself? I got work to do.
Thank you, Janet. Oh my God. Thanks for having me, Janet.
A pleasure. Everybody. Everybody, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi. All you need was a peck from her. Maybe we should trade for some physics or black market spines to go and get us back. Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.